Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. Very excited to be joined today with our guest, Jason Sebastian from Questech. He's the president of the company. They're a little startup that's 25 years old. I don't know if that counts as a startup anymore, but they've been through major changes in the company, and we'll hear about what they're doing today. And we're going to learn about material science today, which I don't even know what the hell that means. So we're all into to learn a few things here today. Jason's laughing at me. All right, before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team, Jason. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Well, Jason, welcome to the show. And what the hell is material science? Because that is the first question I have for you.
Material science. Yeah, it's usually a discipline of engineering. By the way, pleasure to be here. Thank you, Matt. I was just joking with you. I don't think I've seen materials on the agenda of any of these past podcasts. So hopefully this is fun for the listeners. But it's a discipline of engineering. Sometimes it's metallurgy, and depending on whether you're focused on metals or nonmetals, polymer science. But it's about the study and development of new materials, advanced materials. So materials have gone through many iterations of design, from the Stone Age to the Bronze Age to the modern age of semiconductors and things like that. So as a discipline, it includes all of that. It's kind of what got me attracted to it in the first place. It's really a bit of everything: chemistry, physics, engineering, mathematics.
So is it typically metals, plastics, like what all kinds of stuff falls into this?
Well, I'm trying to think, you know, most universities, they've usually just got a material science department, but there's a kind of specialties in metals. Metallurgy, ceramics is another big category, and that can mean everything from toilet bowls to more advanced ceramics, like high temperature coating type ceramics. Polymers is another category that kind of overlaps sometimes with chemical engineering and chemistry, and then semiconductor electronic materials like silicon wafers and things like that. That's another category. So it's really all of the above.
What about things like paint and other kinds of like liquids or gases?
Yeah, there are material science aspects to that. Not so much liquids and gases. I think most material scientists are thinking about solids. Paint is a combination of a liquid and a solid usually. So there's some material science going on there. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of people that trained as material scientists that are now working on paint. But yeah.
All right.
Mostly the solid things we're dealing with.
Well, so tell us a little more about Questech and what you guys do. You know, the company's like 25 years old, but it sounds like you guys have reinvented yourself about 11 times. So tell us what you guys are up to now.
Well, this is probably the third time. But yeah, the company was founded in the late 90s by a professor at Northwestern University, which is right up the street from where I'm sitting here. I'm sitting in Evanston, Illinois, which is one town north of Chicago. This is where Evanston is. The professor was a specialist in steel materials, but he had an overall, and this is Professor Greg Olson. I should give him a name. He had an overall vision that materials could be designed, and not just steels, all materials could be designed. So that was his kind of expert area, design of new materials. He started the company in the late 90s himself. One of his students at the time, a guy named Charlie Kuman, who went off to Apple Computer and then SpaceX, Tesla. Folks in the material science community may know that name. And a financial guy named Ray Ginelli. He was the third co-founder. So they started the company. It was sort of a spinoff of Northwestern University at the time here in Evanston. This was right at the time when I was in graduate school at Northwestern. So I knew about Greg, and I knew that he had this kind of vision of material science. He was not my advisor, so I was just kind of paying attention to what was going on on the side. They started the business. They were focused very much on steels. In fact, they had designed a few steels on the university side, and the business in its earliest stages was about taking those steels to the market, right? These are advanced high-performance steels for like aerospace applications, landing gear, and they were looking to kind of replace what was out there and sell a whole bunch of steel. So we were licensing the steel to steel producers, trying to get interest in the application of the steels. That kind of broadened out, and this now is about the time that I joined Questech in the early 2000s. I joined in 2006. Well, I guess that's the mid-2000s. But the company had already been around 8 or 9 years, and by the time I joined, it had branched out from not just steel but to other materials types as well, titanium, copper, aluminum, nickel. This is the whole kind of pantheon of engineering metals.
Let me ask you a question for a second. So does your guys' company actually sell the metal, or do you guys create like the formulas and you know, figure out the right alloys and all that, and then basically license that, and then somebody else manufactures it? Or like, correct, where do you guys fit into that?
Right.
Educate me how that works.
Yeah, it's more of the latter. So we would design a steel computationally using the computer, using computational models. We'd file for a patent. We'd get the patent granted, and then we'd license the steel to a steel producer. There's a few of our advanced steels that are made by a major steel producer called Carpenter Technology in Pennsylvania. And then they make it and they sell it. And when people want to buy a certain product size, they call Carpenter or they call the steel maker, and we get a royalty on that. And that was the business model. It still is part of the business model, and we've branched out from more than just steel. But we've kind of branched out from just that model of developing materials and then licensing it to a producer and getting a royalty. We started to do projects directly for corporations where we would design the material and they would sort of own it from there. We've got a few exciting success stories along those lines. But as we were moving along here, we ourselves don't make anything. We have a small lab in the basement where we can make tiny test specimens and put them through some of the motions and see what they look like under the microscope. But we ourselves do not make any product in that sense and never have, except for the modern age of Questech. So over the course of 20, 25 years of doing this, doing various programs for the government, for corporate clients, we've amassed a whole library of databases and computational models that we use to do these alloy designs. And the new pivot with Questech in the last 2 years now really is to put that all together into a software package and digitally transform ourselves and digitally transform the folks that use our software. So that's where we're sort of a startup all over again. Getting into the software business is a new thing for us. We're very excited about it. That's kind of the three eras of Questech: the original, let's take these steels to market, and then the sort of middle range where we were doing more than steels and doing it directly with corporations and stuff. And now the new era where we're going into the software mode.
Well, and so when we think about steel, you know, first thing I think of is like steel rebar used for concrete, right? But
yeah,
that's like the most like basic, you know, type of metal that's used, and that's a whole different world from where you guys live in, right? Which is probably a lot more with military or airplanes, all these other things, yeah, where like I need it to, you know, for the military, right? That's like armor for a tank, and it's got to be able to take this kind of impact and this rigidity and this and that and whatever and all these different characteristics to go to it, right? So I'm gonna guess you guys have done a lot of work, you know, Department of Defense and things like that as well.
Absolutely. So steels sometimes get a bad rap. Oh, that's that ancient blacksmith stuff that we've been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. But steel technology has advanced over these centuries, and the steels, the most advanced steels we have these days are way far and beyond maybe what, you know, you or other, you know, kind of common folks would appreciate. Steel really still is the highest strength to weight, strength to density material that we have. You hear a lot about aluminum and titanium. They have lower densities. They can get to certain levels of strength to weight, but steel is still king. And because of all those hundreds of years of development and blacksmithery and whatnot, we have a very intimate understanding of how steels work. There's a lot of fundamental knowledge that's been built up around steels. The steels we're talking about are very much aerospace defense type steels.
Yeah.
So the steels used for landing gear of aircraft. These are steels far and beyond the strength level of probably anything that, you know, you run across outside of aerospace and defense. Certainly, you know, in terms of your car or the engine or sporting goods type steels, these are very, very high strength, high toughness steels. The other place that they come up a lot, gear steels, the gears that go into machinery, there's sort of a level of gear steels. Kind of run-of-the-mill gear steels that people that make lawnmowers and things would use, and then basic automobiles. Then there are the race car, Formula One type gear steels. These are the ones that go into helicopters, which are the absolute highest performance type gear steels, and rightfully so. You can live with your car transmission breaking down or starting to make noise.
Right.
Formula One guys don't like it when cars break down, but they can live with it. But a helicopter, no sir. So these are the super highest performance type steels. But that being said, we work with producers of steels on a little more run-of-the-mill type grades. They may have an issue where they're trying to make a basic steel, but they're making it over and over again, and they want to understand why sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's like the three little piggies or something like that. Or was that right? Is that the – anyway. But just trying to understand the science behind, you know, a little more regular run-of-the-mill steels is something that we also do within this sort of computational modeling framework.
So tell me this, for those just like me and those that are listening that are wondering, like, what the hell is steel made out of? Like, are there like four ingredients and then some magic sauce that's number five? Or like what is steel made out of?
I mean, basically steel is iron plus carbon. And when you add carbon to iron, it can do stuff to the inside crystal structure of the material that gives it much improved strength and toughness are the things we talk about. So iron and carbon equals steel. And the other two ingredients that you come across a lot are chrome and moly. You'll hear about chrome-moly steel. So chrome and moly can combine molybdenum, I should say. It's another element on the periodic table. Chrome, chromium, it's another element on the periodic table. Those are probably the four main ingredients. But engineering steels include a lot more other ingredients like nickel, cobalt, silicon, manganese. It depends on what steel you're talking about. And some steels would include all of that, you know, eight or nine different elements all doing different things within a single material. But basically iron plus carbon. And that was figured out many, many millennia ago.
So you mentioned earlier, like, other alternatives to steel. What about things like carbon fiber? You know, are there other materials like that that they probably have different use cases, right? Like they're not going to make, they don't make a tank out of carbon fiber, but they make a Lamborghini out of carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Right. So what other materials are there out there besides steel?
Carbon fiber is a composite and it's usually carbon fiber. And there's like kind of a plastic impregnating resin that holds it all together. You can get to very high strength to weight ratios, but you can't get to very high absolute strengths. So you can't really support a building, let's say, with right. carbon fiber beams, but you can form the shell of a rocket or a Lamborghini or something like that, or a piece of sporting good equipment out of carbon fiber. So it's a composite, right, though. You've got the fibers themselves and then the resins holding it together. A composite is what they call that. But the other main engineering alloys that you'll hear a lot about, aluminum and titanium, there's various uses of those because they're lower density than iron and steel. The other one you come across a lot is nickel. And nickel is an alloy that can go to higher temperatures than steel. For applications where you want to get to higher temperatures or you want a certain amount of corrosion, environmental resistance, you start looking at things like nickel. And nickel forms a class of materials they call the super alloys, and that's particularly because of the high temperature aspects. Okay. There's other metals out there. I could keep going. You know, copper, magnesium.
Well, we're getting our materials design material science lesson today. So
good. Carbon fiber is not a metal. Carbon fiber, like I said, is a composite, but it forms a class of structural materials. It's either carrying a load or forming some layer of protection against an environment. So they do get all kind of lumped together.
So tell me this. Tell me some of the cool projects you guys have worked on. Like I thought you mentioned before, like Apple, or I see here like something about nuclear reactors. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, Department of Defense, SpaceX, like what kinds of cool stuff you guys work on?
Yeah. And I know those companies, the ones you just mentioned, in addition to the Department of Defense, we were doing a project about 12 years ago or so for one of those companies, as American as a certain kind of pie. If you remember Bendgate, where they were having issues with the iPhones,
people were
sitting on the, and then they, this was a materials problem because they needed to make the cases of the phone a certain size, right, and certain thicknesses and stuff, so they were constrained. But they also and they wanted to use aluminum because it was lightweight. But they also had a certain requirement in terms of the finishing, right? So the anodized surface of your consumer electronic product is very important when it comes to selling lots and lots of phones. But the things that you add to an aluminum alloy to give it strength work against you in terms of making the surface very finishable, right? So there's a trade-off there. And they picked the wrong side of the trade-off. They picked they erred on the side of finishable and ended up with something that wasn't quite high enough strength. So we looked at this problem, and we started down the path of a solution. And they liked what was happening, and they kind of came in at the time. This is 2012, and did an acqui-hire, took a big chunk of the technical personnel at Questech.
Oh wow.
Charlie Kuman, who's the guy I mentioned a couple minutes ago, went with and formed a team at this place in near San Jose, where they worked on materials design. And so there are new materials in a number of products, a number of those consumer electronics products. There was the Milanese loop, the kind of braided steel that goes into the band of the iWatch if you buy that band.
Oh yeah.
It's a stainless steel, but if you notice, it's magnetic. And making a stainless steel magnetic and still having a certain amount of strength to it is a custom kind of alloy thing. The anodizable aluminum I just mentioned, even at the time, you used to be able to buy a gold Apple Watch that had a custom designed gold alloy as part of it. And you can look up some of the patents from Apple on these materials, and you can find the names of folks that used to work at Questech and stuff like that. So there's a relationship there. It was validated just a year ago. The guy, Jim Yurko, who is the director of materials development at Apple, was at a conference, TMS, the materials conference, last spring, 2022. He acknowledged in front of a crowd of about 1,000 materials scientists that Questech had changed Apple's approach to materials design. So they are a very forward-thinking company that way. And another one would be a company focused on space exploration. You do the contraction there. We've worked with them. In fact, Charlie Kumin, the guy that was at Apple, now leads the alloy development team at SpaceX and Tesla. Think what you like about Elon Musk and whatnot. He is a very forward-thinking engineer type guy. He knows materials science. And there are a number of alloys that those two corporations, Tesla and SpaceX, have developed specifically for certain applications. And there's at least one where Questech had a hand. There was a the Raptor engine. That's their mm-hmm. new engine development. That's the one that lifted off the Starship about a month ago, which is exciting in itself, right? This incredibly shiny, the stainless steel. I can talk about that a little more, but it's the most powerful rocket that humans have ever launched, and it's really exciting. But one thing that wasn't being talked about too much, when you go watch the launch, is the fuel is different, right? It's not kerosene plus liquid oxygen for the Raptor. It's methanol plus liquid oxygen, and that burns hotter and more oxidizing than the kerosene liquid oxygen combo. And it's what you need, that kind of thrust and that sort of combustion, to get rockets eventually to Mars. But that highly oxidizing environment from burning methanol and liquid oxygen in the Raptor engine means that certain metals will burn, right? So they had to develop an entirely new nickel superalloy to enable the Raptor engine configuration. Questech had a role in that. They took it over the finish line, but we had a role in the initial stages. And you can look up the tweets from Elon. I think a couple years ago he was saying, our SX500 alloy developed by the SpaceX metallurgy team, burns at a certain temperature and a certain oxygen pressure, and that's no small feat for an alloy. And yeah, Questech had a role in that development. And we're excited about that, and I'm rooting for them in that way. So that's something where we work, both of those examples, the anodized
very cool.
And the super alloy, is something where we've worked with them directly. But just to give another plug for Tesla, which is not what I'm here for exactly, but you hear a lot about the giga casting, right, where they're casting the entire body.
Die casting it.
Yeah. Of Tesla automobiles, like as a single part. This is incredible. But they could not do it with existing alloys. They had to develop an entirely new aluminum alloy that would be castable and that would give them the properties and the thin sections and the thick sections and would squirt through the mold with enough fluidity so that they could do this, right? So they are a forward-thinking company that way, and it's pretty cool. This is something that we would call materials concurrency, right? In the past, people would design a component, a rocket engine or a chassis of an automobile, and they'd essentially go to a list of materials and pick the one that worked, right? And if it didn't have the combination of properties that they want and they needed for their part design, they were either shit out of luck or they'd have to kind of change the design. They'd have to make their part thicker in certain sections to accommodate the strength of what was out there in terms of materials. These days, people are kind of looking beyond, right? How do I design a new material, given the constraints of what I'm trying to do with this product? So materials are on the table, on the design table, the same way that the shape of a component used to be, the same way that the electrical engineering inside of the component used to be. This is something that's been achieved in the other engineering disciplines, concurrency, right? We're considering mechanical aspects at the same time that we're considering electrical engineering aspects. Now materials has a seat at that table, and people are really looking seriously at the idea of new materials. That is very much in the spirit of what my company does. That's very much in the spirit of what our software can help companies do.
So I want to learn more about that software. That's what I really want to learn about. Before I do that, though, I do want to remind everybody that if you need expert software developers, it doesn't have to be difficult. Especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and see what developers are available to join your team today. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. So tell me more about the software, because it sounds pretty incredible to me that you could go in and, I'm going to guess, put in like, I need metal that can support this kind of strength and it would break under this kind of pressure and it could deal with this kind of heat, and then like magically it gives you like the formula or whatever, right? I mean, is that kind of the essence of what what your software does?
Kind of, yeah, yeah. It kind of is, and it's the important part that you're kind of getting at there is it's computational. It's software. Even when I was in graduate school back in the late 90s, material science, which is not that long ago, right? I hope it's not. I'm not that old. But in the late 90s, like, materials still had this very trial and error experimental kind of aspect to it. There were things like computational models that certain professors would be developing to look at one or two behaviors of a material. But the notion that you could design a material with a computer, with a software, was completely out there, you know, just 25 years ago. But it's exciting to see how things have changed, right? And this is one of the acronyms that you come across in our field: Integrated Computational Materials Engineering, ICME. This is the way of putting together all these various computational models that describe how a material works at various length scales and putting them all together into a package that can do the whole thing, that can, you know, predict the overall properties, the strength, the toughness, the things you were just talking about of a material, or better yet, help you design the material. So over the years, there are the length scales. We're talking about things all the way down to the atomic scale. You can use quantum mechanics type models to predict, you know, the way at the atomic scale a material will behave. And, you know, does it have cohesion between the atoms? Is there problems with the cohesion between the atoms? Those little atomic scale processes and phenomena scale all the way up to the macroscopic behavior of a material. And okay. There are length scales in between, right? That's the atomic scale, the kind of smallest scale. You take it a scale up, you've got the scale of the crystal lattices, then you have grains that are happening within a material, you have precipitates like the carbides and steel that affect the eventual properties, then you have kind of the macro scale of how things get put together, forging, casting, that sort of thing. So we're looking at things across all of the various length scales. We're using it to predict various levels of structure within the material, like the ones I just mentioned.
So does that require some like crazy supercomputer physics calculations, or does this run on your laptop?
No, it's more like the latter. And there are some of these atomic scale simulations that do take supercomputers and stuff. But for us, that's not, you know, most of the things we do run on a desktop. The software packages that we're developing now are designed to either run on the desktop or off in the cloud. Mm-hmm. But the real computationally heavy stuff, no, that is not necessary. We'll leave that to the professors who really want to look at the detailed quantum mechanical electron structure of things. A lot of our softwares and models were originally developed as like Excel spreadsheets and stuff. So it's like input, output, boom, here's your answer.
Right.
So they do not require, I guess in a way is they could run on your phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems like if somebody like, you know, if you're trying to build a rocket engine and all that kind of stuff, and you're trying to figure out at what point in time, you know, the temperature and pressure and all that is going to blow it all up, then
yeah,
to be some crazy
of simulations of the flow of gases and stuff within an engine. Those are pretty heavy duty simulations that do require some serious computing power. But the ability to predict the properties of a material based on simple inputs, like what is the composition, what are the times and temperatures of the heat treatment, these kinds of simulations are much less intensive.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been building that software?
Well, since the beginning, 25 years, right? The steels that were developed at the end of the 90s, there were a lot of models being developed that went into the design of those steels. And then as we branched across all the other materials classes into the 2000s, lots of different models being put together. I say models, it's in the kind of broad sense. There are models, there are databases, there's inputs and outputs. But we've been gathering all that stuff for 25 years. We've built a name for ourselves in the field, you know, as folks that can do this. We can say confidently that we're the only company that has computationally designed materials that are now flying. That's a huge milestone in the materials development realm. We've got five materials even, not just steels, that are now achieved flight qualification. So 25 years of kind of developing various models for various programs and projects, it finally kind of dawned on us, like, what are we doing here? There's a lot of this stuff that, yeah, we'll use maybe once, or we'll dust it off every now and then. But you know, unless somebody comes to us with another project on that specific system or something, these models and such are just going to sit there. Can we pull them together into a package, into a platform, and productize this whole library of stuff that we've developed over the years? So that's what we're doing now. And yeah, it probably, the knowledge goes back 25 years, if not further, if you want to dig deeper into the professor's history.
So how is that going with building the software? Have you guys figured out like who your target audience is and how you sell it and all that kind of stuff? Yeah. Or are you guys still in like the development phase?
We're getting to the end of the development phase. The official release date is July 1st, but we had a soft release towards the end of last year, and we've got a few trial and evaluation partners that we're working with. The professor, Greg Olson, is now at MIT, and as part of his research group and his materials design class, they're evaluating the software for us. And then the company that I was talking about earlier that does electric cars and rocket ships, they're also looking into to the evaluation of the software. So it goes live in a little over a month here. The types of companies that would materials intensive corporations that work with materials across a range of divisions and a range of product offerings, these are the ones that are going to benefit the most. So, you know, think about companies like the ones I just talked about.
Anybody makes cars or all sorts of stuff like that.
Yes, major defense OEMs. You think about the Raytheons and the Pratt & Whitneys, although they're part of the same company now, and Northrop Grumman's of the world. They're not just working on one material. They're not just working on one component. They've got divisions across the board. Lockheed Martin.
Right.
You know, they've got parts of their corporations that are doing assembly and heat treatment and putting things together. They've got other parts of the corporations that are actually designing new materials and stuff. And we know for a fact that, you know, a lot of these folks are kind of not quite sharing information or able to plug into what one another is doing in an efficient way. That's where our software comes in.
So does the software replace what you guys were doing before as like a, as a consulting or professional service? Is the goal to, or is it just a tool? It's like it could be self-service where people could use the software, or they could also use your professional services with it. Like, how do you see that evolving, like your business model?
That's a really great question, because we get that question. Like, aren't you giving away the keys to the kingdom, so to speak? And we would say absolutely not. It's going to augment what we've done in terms of services. A lot of the folks in implementing the software and subscribing to the software are going to need our assistance in implementing it or customizing it in a way or calibrating some of it to their production data. So in the end, we will remain a services type consulting business. That also has this software subscription line of revenues. And we were just talking about it this morning with my boss, the COO. You know, we would see that split maybe 50-50 or even 60-40 on the side of services moving forward. But yes, it's a great question, because, you know, in the past, we didn't quite have this perspective. It would have been, we want to do it for you. But a lot of companies don't like that, right? They want to do it themselves. And some of it is not necessarily pride of ownership, but also because of security and stuff, and because of issues as it relates to intellectual property. They want to be able to kind of own what they do. And the software lets them do that. And we're happy to let them do it in that way.
So does that mean you have to, like, ship the software and they run it on their computers? That way you don't have access to what they're doing and stuff in regards to the intellectual property?
It's cloud-based, as we're putting together right now. So we, you know, if they would allow us, we would have the option of kind of, you know, helping them or watching what's happening, making sure it's done correctly. If they want it to be secure and separate, then we don't. And we're always also looking into some like on-premise implementation. It's kind of interesting. The most technically advanced corporations, like the aerospace and defense corporations, these are the ones in some ways more reluctant to go with a full cloud implementation because of security concerns.
Right, sure.
They're just not cool with uploading their data to somewhere else where they would manipulate it there. So we're remaining open. The initial configuration is all cloud-based. And people would have their own secure private partitions. But if they wanted us to kind of peek inside and help them with what they're doing, that would be an option.
Well, I could definitely see somebody that does work for the Department of Defense, right, that would not want access to any of that stuff to be on the internet,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
How they made the protective armor for the Abrams tank, you know, like trade secret or whatever.
We've worked in those types of materials, and that, I mean, you just hit it on the head. Some of that data as it relates to that, those defense performance, armor performance, that is very highly, it's not just about cloud secure or anything, it's classified, right?
So yeah.
Customers that want to deal with that, and given that not everybody at Questech has classified clearance, none of
right.
us do, some, then that would have to be a separate arrangement. It's just going to be that way.
So do you guys do that kind of work today? Like you're able to deal with top secret stuff, or are you hoping that your software will enable that and then your employees aren't part of it?
We do a lot of defense related work. Top secret is a whole nother echelon of classification. Most of what we deal with is a few levels down.
Okay.
But there is work that we do, and this is independent of the software development. There's projects that we've done and engagements we've done for defense partners. Where we have to be very careful about where we store data and what we do with it and how we deliver reports and stuff.
Interesting.
And who can work on things. There's people that are at work at Questech that are on work visas and stuff. We have to be careful about that.
We had at one of my previous customers, we would have users that would download our software and they didn't have internet access because they were doing Department of Defense. So they're like, how do we install this software? And we're like, you don't, it doesn't work that way.
We have a room. It is literally a room that has key access where some of the not classified, but some of the restricted project work happens. And this was just, you know, as of a few years ago, because of the requirements with this customer, the Army, right? We had to have an air gap computer installed, no connections to the internet. I might even think these things existed anymore, but we've got one. And right, and anything that goes in and out of that computer is done via USBs or anything, something like that, but absolutely no internet. But that's in the realm of drawings and things like that. Nothing to do with our software per se. But like list tables of requirements, you know, certain performance requirements for armor and things like that. You got to be real careful about that.
Very cool. Very cool that you guys get to do all that stuff. It's a whole different world from, the type of software that I've built over my career. And be very cool to build that kind of simulation kind of software, or, you know, being able to do all those kinds of calculations and stuff is super cool.
It is cool. It's an extension of, what I learned in school and what I'm passionate about. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I do want to remind everybody, if you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, FullScale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and our platform will match you up with our fully vetted experts that are available to join your team. At FullScale, we specialize in building a long-term team that works only for you. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Well, Jason, I really appreciate having you on the podcast today, learning all about material sciences. Now I can say I know what the hell that means, so that's good.
Yeah. Are we getting near the end here? You're very good at those little segue plugs. I don't even notice you're doing it.
I'm not good at it, actually.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I'm excited about what I do. Hopefully the audience learned a little thing or two about materials. Hopefully you appreciate why we're kind of a startup, even though we've been around for 25 plus years.
It's a new software business.
Yeah. And I would say in that sense, right, we've been self-funding the software development. We continue to be a profitable, cash flow positive type operation, but we are looking for potential investors, VC type investment, where we could use that capital to really turbocharge what we're talking about here, invest in a lot more proper software developers, a lot more proper market facing sales type people, and really take this to the next level ASAP.
Well, awesome. Well, we were all rooting for you. And a reminder, this is Jason Sebastian with Questech. That is Q-U-E-S-T-E-K.com. So as we wrap up the show, do you have any final suggestions, words of wisdom out there for other entrepreneurs or business owners?
Boy, oh boy, stick with it and get excited. And you know, for me to, I would just say for young scientists and stuff, right? You know, get that engineering mindset, or computer scientists or something, like, you know, you've got ideas in your head, you can put those into practice. It's really exciting. I think a lot of people that study material science have this notion in their head that, oh man, maybe I would be able to develop new materials someday. And then a lot of them go off to companies and they're just in some procurement department where they're just buying materials and testing them or something like that. Yeah. No. You know, on the materials side, you know, think big. New materials are always going to be needed. New levels of performance are always popping up. That's on the materials side. You know, on the entrepreneurial side, I would say, boy, you know, ideas are worth pursuing. You know, I was more of an academic minded science type person. To have been part of this company that's gone through several rounds of reinventing itself and all sorts of phases of different customer interactions and stuff. It's really exciting. Don't get too bogged down in the science. Get out there with people and learn how your technologies get applied in the real world, and then go make successful businesses around it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show today.
Cheers. Thanks, Matt. Go start a puzzle.
All right. Take care.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.